Vegas, right? So it's only going to go so many ways.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bale of All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Evening.
Welcome. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in week after week. Like, share, and subscribe. This is a weekly podcast where we talk about Warhammer 40,000 typically, but you know, sometimes we take some deep dives into all kind of nerd stuff.
Mostly. Like board games?
Yeah. Yeah. My board games are mostly Warhammer 40,000. Yeah.
Sometimes
I have just discovered that there are Firefly audiobooks.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they like new material, like recent material?
I have no idea. I've literally just been pointed out that there's like five or six of them, and a lot of them have the original cast, apparently.
Oh, nice. Like his voice actors?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'd check into that.
I'm very keen.
Yeah. I've watched panels and stuff that they've been on. And very entertaining.
Yeah, extremely. I've also just finished, I'm cracking into The Siege of Terror. I finished Solar War and gotten my teeth stuck into, what was the next one? Lost in the Damned?
Yep.
Saucy.
Yeah, wait till you get to Saturnine.
I finished reading Storm of Iron. And it was pretty good. Normally, I don't enjoy sort of like chaos, like fronted novels, but that one was actually quite good. Liked it.
Maybe we should establish like a cadence. If the book's been out X years, then we can talk about it a lot.
I could take one for the team, I suppose.
Oh no, no, yeah. I wouldn't spring that on anybody. okay, I wouldn't spring that on anybody again mid episode.
But I just feel so up against it with Siege of Terror. Like all my mates, I've got friends, a bunch of my friends just finished Warhawk, which only came out this weekend, and they finished it. And I'm like, stop. Please.
I hear that's pretty spectacular though. I've not read it yet either.
Me too.
It's one of those things where like you're like, okay, I'm glad you read it. I hope you enjoy it. We can have a conversation about it in maybe 6 months to a year.
Maybe 6 months, exactly. And all these chats that I'm in, I feel like they have to start their own chats because I can't talk in the chats that we're in because...
That's right.
You know, a couple of days goes by with chat. No activity. They're talking about it somewhere else.
Exactly right. That dude, spot on. And I'm like, man, I just wonder how many chats I'm not in on now. Just because I can't consume book at the same rate as I used to when I was 12, like these guys.
Got to go to work, got to record podcasts and stuff.
Yeah. Do you remember sitting down and just like inhaling a novel like as a kid?
I used to read a lot on planes, and now we don't travel as much anymore.
It's true.
I used to inhale novels. Yeah. We didn't have cable though. I never really learned to love TV, but so I would read if I had free time. I just don't have any of that anymore.
I remember having to take an accelerated course to make up for the time I did not do so well on the course. So this is not... I'm not saying, oh, it was an accelerated learning. No, I had to force my way through another class again and had to do like a weekly book report. And so I picked the series called Myth Adventures. Love those books.
Nice.
Yeah.
Maybe we should we start doing book reports on the show? Should that be like a once a month little book report?
Have a book club, may or may not be 40K related.
Well, I can finally do those ones that Red's been trying to force me to read for whatever. I can't even remember what they are, Red.
I'll tell you, Forgotten Realms and Dragonlance.
Oh my gosh. Along with the app. Just go ahead and throw that in there.
Yeah, just throw it in there. Adam's product report of the things he's... Red writes the list and Adam ticks one off a month and reports back.
Do you get the Amazon Prime
to
down there?
40K rules.
We do have Amazon Prime, I think, but I'm not sure if it's as good as it is over there. Like, we don't have the infrastructure you guys do to have, like, same-day, next-day stuff.
I need to get one of these books in your hands so you can just... Because you'll be hooked then. If you just need to read one, and then...
Just need to get the hook in, yeah. Well, they're going to have to wait until I'm finished with Siege of Terror, because I don't intend to read anything else until that's done. I've tried to time the start so that I'll be finishing the whole series as the last ones come out. Like, I'll be reading the last couple as they're released. But yeah, so far Solar War was not what I thought it was going to be.
Oh, really? Okay. What were do you mind sharing what you maybe what your expectations might have been?
So I think my expectations were skewed. So like it's the book is broken down into three portions, following three main characters, and one of those main characters' storylines I don't think was enough to warrant its inclusion in the book, and there were so many portions that I wanted personally to get more attention that didn't. Mm-hmm. That didn't mean I didn't enjoy the novel. I enjoyed it immensely. It just, yeah, it was...
Just they just didn't just, cover the stuff that you thought might have been
yeah,
in
yeah, well, so there one. Were these... There were, so I'll
are you basing your expectations, like, off of the way that the Barry Dagger ended? Or are you... did or, like, the cover of the book?
So, to my mind, there was phenomenally gigantic, vast, climactic battles that occurred in that novel that got paragraphs of coverage, whereas this character's flailing about to no apparent purpose... got chapter after chapter after chapter. And so that's where my expectations differed. And that's where I found myself a bit frustrated. Still didn't diminish my overall enjoyment of the book. Once I put the book down and I was finished, I was like, I am very satisfied with that. I've found that very enjoyable. I feel like I know a lot more. And I know what to expect from these hereafter. And I understand why that character was there and got so much attention. It's because that was the only... In a conflict so vast with... so many characters that are abhuman, subhuman, beyond human, space marines, primarchs, demons, whatever you want to be. It's good to have that relatable human portion of the mm-hmm. novel. And so the people to actually be like, oh, this is a human's perspective of this absurd solar system wide climactic battle or series of. And it's good to have that human point of view, that human perspective. But yeah, so yeah, it definitely didn't take away from the whole, but it just wasn't quite what I expected. And I wish I had gotten some other things and less of some others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That may even out over the next couple of books.
Well, exactly right. And I've already starting A Lost and a Damned. It is. I've got so much insight that I wanted immediately in that novel. And I feel like that it's, you can tell these were written with a theme. They're all, while they're written by different authors at different times, at different settings, there's a linear path being followed here, and you need to go with it as far as it'll take you, not just stop here and decide.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell all the authors communicate with each other as well, and I know they mentioned that, in the times we've spoken with them or on their own social medias, and there seems, in the novels, like the series of novels so far, it looks like a couple of the novels are there to kind of give you that real connective tissue to give you exactly what the state of certain mindsets or beliefs or situations for pockets of factions or whatever are. And then some are there to slingshot the story forward. It's interesting.
Yeah, spot on.
But no spoilers. I'm trying to be cryptic as I possibly can, because I've enjoyed every single one of them so far.
Yeah, I was trying to be really vague as well. So there are all these like myths and maybe urban legends surrounding all the Horus Heresy and the Siege of Terra authors. And there's one that was at the start of starting the novel series. A bunch of the most well-known writers got together and had a huge meeting over however long, and on that meeting they had like a whiteboard where they kind of got the beginning, middle and end of each kind of Primarch story together. And this could be just be urban legend and couldn't even be a thing, but man, I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that
one.
They're just defining what they want these stories to be, how they want it to be covered, who gets what, what's important. It sounds incredible.
They're doing them justice. I mean, and what a task to meet up to the expectations that people have been carrying around with them. And when that idea in your own head, and you're basically just making it be whatever you want inside your own head, and they're measuring up to that, I think, with almost everyone that reads it.
Yeah, there's only been a handful of Horus Heresy books that I felt dropped back into, I suppose, what we'd call the, I don't know if you, bolter porn. Is that a term you guys use over there?
It is.
I feel like there's only been a handful of Horus Heresy novels that I felt like have leaned too far that way. Most of them retain this beautiful narrative and underlying, investment in characters throughout it. I do, man, I'm amazed they've done, I've only finished one book and I'm halfway through another one, and I'm still amazed they've done as well as they have with some parts of it. Like, I think about the sheer weight of plot armor that are on some of these characters.
Sure.
And how they have to navigate those in these, like, millions upon millions upon millions of people fighting and dying and battling across solar systems and galaxies.
Because you know they make it, or you know they end in a certain,
exactly,
they die in a certain way.
Like, yeah. How many times does Khan the Betrayer need to run into the jaws of death and somehow make it out? And you're like, well, every single time in the whole series, because he's alive in 40K.
But
right?
Do you think that's, I mean, that is actually a great example, and Sanguinius being another example of that. But they don't even mess around. They state it as such. Like, Sanguinius himself says it as much. I mean, he doesn't come out and say, I have plot armor, but he basically says, I know how I'm checking out. And this situation isn't it.
The same thing. Yeah. The Night Hunter from the Night Wards, he says the same thing. He's like, I don't die here, so I'm good.
Yeah. Awesome lines like that. I love it. But what it brings up for me, you guys remember the last couple of episodes of Game of Thrones, where the plot armor was just so erroneously stupid. Like,
we don't actually talk about the last few episodes of Game of Thrones, by the way. So this may get cut out.
New series just launched. The ones about the Targaryens, set 200 years before the plot. That just got, the trailer just came out yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, it's going to be on HBO, right, I think?
Yeah, yeah, exciting.
It's also directed by the person who did some of those final episodes, so if that gives you hope for anything. I hope I just killed it.
Yikes.
I wish you didn't just tell me that bit. But that's what I mean about the plot armor being so thick, it hurts your immersion.
Yeah. I'm probably gonna watch that show, by the way. But
I'm watching the hell out of it.
But I,
sure.
Yeah,
we all watched
know.
The most recent Star Wars movies, right?
We don't talk about those either.
Yeah, we don't talk about those either.
Although I have seen them multiple times.
I haven't seen the last. I haven't watched the last one yet. And I kind of.
Well, this is probably like the point where I'm like, oh man, you got to. But I'm not gonna overly push that.
I appreciate your respect.
You're doing fine here, Adam. You're good.
For the first time, I've missed out on something, and no one's chewing me out. This is great.
I feel like I miss out on everything because I just don't watch TV. So you're all sitting here talking about Game of Thrones. I'm like, I've never seen
an
episode.
In retrospect, I think you've done all right with that.
I think so.
Yeah, you came out on top.
Maybe they'll fix it in the book. Who knows? I don't want to just besmirch the actors or whatever. I think that story could have been much, much better and deserved to be better, actually. But I don't think we're in that situation with the Siege of Terror at all. I have immensely enjoyed all the stuff that I've consumed on that to this point, and I can't imagine that train slowing down. Mm. But let us know what you think. We're all at different stages of reading that, so we'll see how it goes. Oh, I do. Look, before we get too far in this show, I really want to talk about all the Black Templar stuff we've seen.
Oof.
Look, Adam, I'm just going to yield the floor to you.
I am gushing. I am just so enamored with everything except for the bowl haircuts on the neophytes. That's about it. That's my only gripe.
But how is he going to be able to tell that they're neophytes?
I don't know. Oh, a better haircut? I don't know.
Oh, just the bare arms.
That's how you know they're neophytes, because they have a garbage haircut.
They got a garbage haircut. It's a rite of passage.
I'm just going to say I'm a fan of the bowl cuts just for the memes that have come out of it.
It's absurd. It's so absurd. So Helbrecht's my favorite so far. I absolutely adore the Helbrecht concept art. The fact that it's at every turn, G-Dub has linked this back to the original. Like, some of the original artwork is what Helbrecht's modeled off. Even today, one of the the Marshall being modeled off the third edition or the fourth edition John Blanche art of the dude with the semi-skull helmet, the Parax. Yeah. Oh, just slap me in the face with it. I'm done already.
You're talking about the Castellan, right? Is that dude?
The Marshal.
Oh, that. So the Marshal. Yeah, but the Castellan's on that box art.
Yeah, yeah. And dude, there is just so much goodness to be had here. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I remember us talking about it, and I was just saying, like, I'd be surprised if they get more than just the Emperor's Champion, which I was almost certain was coming. And yeah, it turns out they're getting so much more. If you ever been Crusader curious, it's time to roll it out. Go for it.
I like that the fact that the upgrade sprue, it says you can basically use it for all the Marines, like all the Marine kits. Well, I shouldn't say upgrade sprue, it's an upgrade kit.
Mm. Yeah. And even that is like traditional. There's always been like a Black Templar upgrade sprue. And they're just like, yeah, well, we're just going to make a new one. And the new one's cool. It's even got the relics on it, the Crusader relics. It's got like the helm of Cacodomius or whatever it is, and the Crusader's helm, all that awesome stuff. I love what G-Dub's done here.
Yeah, and it looks like we've got, what is it, the Judicar, maybe a sword for him. But then there's two hands holding skulls.
Yep.
They look pretty good.
When I saw the Empress Champion, I was a little bit weird on it. For better or for worse, I thought they were like, are they walking this tightrope of trying to make him look busy but plain at the same time? Like, the silhouette looks busy, but the model looks plain. I'm like, is this an interesting... Is somebody just being like, let's just see how far I can push this concept? So I was a little bit apprehensive about the rest of the range, but my God, the Sword Brethren are just... Oh, possibly some of the greatest models I've ever seen, just because they speak to me on every level.
I like how they all got the crazy, like, good close, like, pistol weapons.
Yeah.
And then seemingly a bunch of different options for their close combat weapon.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome.
I like the candles on the back of stuff, by the way.
I like that they have, like, special purity seals.
Extra, extra special.
Yeah, they are so extra.
The shields in there.
Whatever those candles are made out of, for them to be able to, like, resist not just being, like, obliterated by just all the stuff happening around the Space Marine, there's some pretty special candles.
That's the Imperial wax that the purity seals are also made out of. Like, that stuff is permanent. It's plastic wax.
Steel wax.
Adamant wax.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be intense.
But yeah, I'm really excited for it. And I'm interested in some of the things that they've released or let us know about it. So for those of you maybe unfamiliar, Black Templars don't have librarians. They don't have a librarius. They skew that completely. They refuse to participate. In fact, most of their dogmatic life is about abhorring the witch, destroying the psychers at every possible turn. So I was interested to see what this new codex did in lieu of that, because in the last one, or in the supplement they got in 8th edition, they were given another litany tree. So instead of having a psychic tree, they got a whole new tree of litanies from, like, chaplains, because chaplains are so pivotal to the ecclesiarchy and kind of their way of doing things. And so I think now they're getting these things called hymns.
Where are you seeing that?
The vows?
The vows.
Apologies. Yeah. Which sounds cool. Sounds real cool.
So what we've seen on the community site is that you've got a vow and then some type of drawback. So abhor the witch, destroy the witch. It's while this vow is in effect, once per battle in your first movement phase, if there are any enemy psyker units in your opponent's army until the end of the phase, add 3 to the move characteristic of models in this unit. Each time a model in this unit makes a melee attack against a psyker unit, reroll a wound roll of 1. But on the other side of that, you got a passion. While an enemy psyker is within 18 inches of this unit cannot perform any actions. I don't think that's much of a drawback.
Well, for Marines, it's actually not that much of a drawback. A lot of the time, the only real action one for Marines you'd consider taking is either banners if you have a lot of objectives in your deployment zone, or you'd be taking retrieve Octarius data if you're playing a more of an MSU style approach. And either of those in the right matchup, you can just be like, nah, just not taking this one. I'm just going to take stuff like Oath of Moment and Engage on All Fronts instead. But what's really exciting is when you choose these, which is what's cool about it.
After the mission briefing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to write this down on your list. Like, you can just be like, okay, I see what mission I'm playing, I see what opponent I'm playing, and then I choose. And I think that's really exciting.
What we saw, and we'll talk a little bit about the U.S. Open Series in Louisiana after the break, but one of the things that kept coming up about how out of sequence things are becoming or being utilized in extremely powerful ways. And there's a lot that you can do. You have to declare on your list, and things that you don't have to declare on your list are things you can do mid-game or redeploy things or pick a different, a pregame stratagem or something that's that you did not have to define when you get up to the tournament to see who you're playing. Such as choosing secondaries is one of the defining moments of how to win games.
Absolutely right, man. And it's cool that it links in. It seems very close to what Sisters can do with their own whatever that's called. I'm bad at this, but. They've got a similar thing, and it's cool because they're both kind of these two main pillars of the ecclesiarchy. You've got the Adeptus Sororitas, you've got the Templars who follow along kind of closest to the priesthoods and the religious fervor of worshiping the Emperor. And it's cool that they have this little underlying link that their kind of mono faction bonuses are similar.
I played Black Templar in an Adepticon team tournament 1 year, so I have a small Black Templar force. I'm not a Black Templar player though, but kind of picking up what they're about.
Well, I've had to make a very hard call in my life because I started Black Templars as the very first Marine army I'd done since fourth edition when I'd played Blood Angels because Red was cool when I was 12. And
hey, Red's still pretty cool. He's right. He can hear you also.
He can. I know. And he plays World Eaters, so he knows exactly what's up with there. And so, yeah. I initially played them, made like a nice 2,000, 3,000 point force, but then I got into Dark Angels and painted my Dark Angels up the Horus Heresy scheme of like black with splashes of red. And now I'm like, do I want to own two black and red Space Marine armies, or am I just going to paint them all as the Dark Angels one? And that's the decision I came to. Nah, you're just painting all of them as Dark Angels. And because Dark Angels are the First Legion, and my fluff is that the First Legion has become the First Legion again because the Lion is awake, that they are acting like that and had all the wings back. So they got a wing that pretty much acts like every other Space Marine faction. And yes, okay. It's cheesy, but no, it's mine. I'll do what I want.
Okay. No, yeah, they are your models. I mean, I actually fully respect that.
But yeah, owning multiple black scheme... Black Space Marine just felt like, oh my god, so I need to paint for every squad of intercessors I have, I need to have two squads. Man. For every infiltrators I had, I needed to have two squads so I could play one in each of the armies. I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore. Yeah. That's a bad plan.
Yeah, I've been trying to paint black for I don't know how many years and still not good at it.
Can you field an entire, have you got enough points to field an entire Death Company 2000 point army?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's the case. Yeah.
Twice over, yeah?
So I have, once you start adding in all the, so I have something like 20 Jump Pack Death Company, a couple of Death Company characters, and then at least 20 Death Company on foot, and then some Death Company Dreadnoughts. So
that's awesome.
I don't know how many points that is, but that's the amount. That's what I have in Death Company. So probably. You throw in a bunch of chaplains.
That's what I'm hearing.
We can make up the difference in chaplains.
I always find it really cool when people have really deep collections like that because I'm a fairly new player, so I don't have that. I find that I'm stress painting quite a bit all the time. Like as the meta changes, I'm like, oh my god! I'm like, not only do I have to like paint the new unit, but I also have to paint like all of the other supporting units that all other players would have already had done.
Oh no, so, I'm still right there with you because inevitably my list were like, oh, I really need hand flamers on all these. Well, crap, Paul, you only have two hand flamers in your army now. So now you got to figure out how to get 18 more hand flamers on these models.
Yeah. But I'm also like doing it to myself because instead of just being like, yeah, I'm just going to focus on like guard and orcs. Now I'm like, oh, I just traded for this 4,000 point custodes army. So now I have to do that too.
That's cool.
Oh man.
Custodes are strong.
Have you got a scheme for the custodes thought up yet? I'm always interested in what people decide to do.
Yeah. So I've done a test scheme on it and I think it's going to actually go together quite quickly, but it's like a sort of burnt red, like a dark brick color, and I bring the highlights up quite a bit, so it's almost yellow highlights, and then that's going to be the armor, and then all of the like cloaks and stuff like that are going to be like a turquoise color, almost like the seas in the Gulf of Mexico, like just really bright turquoisey kind of color.
Finishing move segment coming up, how to do turquoise cloth. Next episode.
Okay, it's two paints. I feel like this is my tips. It's always how to do this with two paints.
No, that's perfect, actually. There's nothing worse, you know, when you see people doing some kind of crafting. Oh, this only takes 3 minutes. Oh, well, it took $700 worth of tools. And, I guess it did once you've become a carpenter.
I felt like that getting into airbrushing. It's like, oh wow, you can base coat your whole army in like an hour. And I'm like, yeah, after learning all the ins and outs of cleaning and you know, I think the analogy was if you're willing to spend 3 months and $300, you too can buy grow $3 worth of tomatoes this year. I'm like, that's exactly how I feel about airbrushing. Seems. But I still, and yet now that I've learned it, I regret nothing.
That's funny. That is, but very accurate. No spoilers though. Turquoise cloth next week.
Okay.
Yeah. we're talking about the models, the Black Templar though. It's like, come on, this is the upgrade kit in between the models and the various characters they've shown us. I think this is going to be a pretty stellar looking force.
Oh, it's going to be amazing force to see on the table. I'm
surprised
black...
we got the neophytes. So, sorry, Tanya.
Dime.
I think that black looks really good on the table. Like when you have a cohesive black force, it's the same as if you have white or yellow on the table. Like you see a cohesive force, you're like, ooh, that looks pretty good. But I think a well-painted black army is like exactly the same effect.
Oh my goodness. One of the best painted armies from this past weekend was Dan Boyd's, from the 40K Badcast, by the way, his Raven Guard, third company Raven Guard. Beautiful. We had him on stream, and one of the shots, and I mentioned this on the stream, but one of the close-up camera views we got looked like a picture out of White Dwarf.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
There, he was fighting a Space Wolf player, and like the space Wolves were well-painted as well, but the way the camera was coming at it, it's the Space Wolves were kind of slightly out of focus on the periphery, and we just got a super tight shot of some Blade Guard and Shrike, if I'm remembering correctly, and it looks like one of the nicest shots in White Dwarf you've ever seen.
Full beakies on the...
I don't think it full beaks on everybody.
I'm going to put it out there. I'm a huge fan of beaky Primaris models. I think beakies on Primaris look amazing.
Yeah. And all the heads are same scale, so you can swap.
Wait,
yeah.
By beakies, you're talking about like Mark VI helmets?
Corvus armor, yeah.
You're talking about, you know, like the bob cuts, like that's the head that you just end up collecting, like you have so many of because you're never going to use them. I got probably about 3 tackle boxes worth of beak heads. Like,
oh, really? We got to talk. I'm dibs. Yeah. Dibs.
Yeah. I want to do some. I want to do some outriders with all beakies on them for Raven Wing.
Okay, you guys are talking about, you know, extra redemptors or whatever. You want to send my way? I'll send you all the beakies on.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I really want, like, I don't want to be greedy. So this, I'm really happy what G-Dub's doing with this Black Templars box army set, because they're doing essentially doing made to order. They've said that anybody who wants one will be able to get one. Well, here's the thing. What if you want to?
Yeah, dude, go for it. I mean, you're a long time Black Templar player.
I'm not going to feel bad if I can't get to. And I do feel a little bit greedy for wanting to. And I think I'll be passing on. Mostly I want to because I want to run either 2 squads of 10 of the Neophyte Crusader Neophyte Initiates, because, or if you can run a 20 man, I want to run a 20 man. Like, that's just going to be the best thing ever.
With stuff that is made to order, I mean, you should be able to guilt-free order a couple if they are indeed making to fill the demand of whoever puts the order in. So.
Yeah, that's possible. But I still wouldn't be surprised if there is some kind of mechanic to stop scalpers and whatnot.
Well, even to that effect, you're not ordering for anything in an impure purpose. You are a Black Templar player who wants these Black Templar models.
That's true.
I say fire away, and sorry if I'm upsetting anyone online, but
But I mean, at the same time, if me getting one means someone else doesn't get one, then, you know.
No, actually, I can respect that, but I don't. If it is, and I haven't looked into it, like what they're saying on the site, but if it is truly made to order, then they probably aren't going to, you know,
have an issue
where anybody couldn't get one. I mean, I don't know that'd be the case, but I mean, order one, and then like an hour later, order another.
Or hold new account. Ask my brothers to make a cheeky GW.
No, I mean, just you order one, and then if it's still there in an hour from now, that means. Yeah, everybody's getting what they want.
Yeah. If everybody who's desperate, who really wants one, who's thirsty for it, will have gotten one by then. Yeah. That's fair, man. New Orleans just happened, hey? You were over there, Paul?
Yeah. No, actually, let's take a short break here, word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk about that, because I'm going to talk about some of the armies that we saw. I want to talk about what did well, what seemingly struggled a bit, and even what did well, but I think could have done a little bit better. But see you in a second.
Beautiful.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Still got everybody here. Before we talk about the New Orleans U.S. Open 2021 series, Red, you were actually at the Las Vegas team tournament.
I sure was. Man, I got to say. So, okay, quick story time, because I had such an awesome time. It was so good. It pumped me up so much to be like back in a large event. I'll admit that's probably... I haven't been to a large event to that scale in a hot minute, just because of everything going on, COVID and everything. And so it was really great to just be back with the community and my friends and see everybody again. Just, you know, friends from far and far out and everything, and to see all the teams. I mean, it really was an amazing environment, because these teams you could definitely tell it was a, I don't know if some people thought that they were maybe just going, you know, going to run into random teams or something, but it was definitely the deep end of the pool as far as some of those teams went, which made it for some really great games. And I'll say just again, quick story time. So I had a flight. I was ready to, I was going to fly from where I'm at in Texas, El Paso, to Las Vegas. And my flight, unfortunately, got canceled. And it was one of those things, like, they delayed it a little bit. And they're like, oh, well, we've got maintenance issues. And so I had to figure out what I was going to do. And I looked around at some other flights. And yeah, I just ended up driving. So I drove from El Paso to Vegas. It's about 11 hours. I did all that. So, I mean, honestly, I wasn't going to let the team down, and really to see all my friends and everybody that was going to be there. So I drove on Friday and got there before my flights got.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I drove to Vegas and I had an amazing.
I thought weekend. You weren't supposed to do that. Like, I guess back in the day, you probably couldn't have done that because of the gas stations and cars and the desert heat, yeah. That kind of stuff. But
yeah, no, just made it. It was good. Just drove it, did it.
Nice.
Got it down.
Love that story.
Yeah. No, so it was awesome. Able to make it and got there and played with some. We had two U.S. Army esports teams playing in it, which was awesome. We were trying to have a third, so there was going to be red, white, and blue. And then it just ended up being red and white team, which is still amazing. And then we had, I was not the team captain of the red team. I know that seems counterintuitive. I was the team captain of the white team. We had an amazing time. It was awesome. And I tell you what, driving saved me some of the hassle with, didn't have
packing
to
up the army. You know,
exactly. And so I just got to drive my army out, which was awesome. So yeah. Again, great time. We had some great people and some great games. And that about sums up my experience. I was so excited to be able to do it. So glad it worked out. I'm looking forward to my next big event.
Were you able to get some good hangout time with the crew?
Oh yeah. No, it was really, and the local, the venue they had for it and everything was perfect. There's a nice, you know, I mean, it's Vegas, right? So it's only going to go so many ways, but it was a really good setup. Reese and Frontline Gaming put on an awesome show, and the hanging out with everybody in Vegas was perfect. It really good event. Really awesome. I look forward to how that continues to develop, because and that was my first chance to really play with the Frontline Gaming, you know, kind of terrain setup and everything that they had with player place terrain and all. And I really liked it. I liked the mission setup. I liked how they went about it. It was pretty good.
Yeah, nice. We need to. I love team tournaments in general, and so having more episodes just about the team tournament dynamic and what you take and how you define list and is something we should definitely do more of in the future.
Oh, how'd you boys? Yeah. How'd you and your lads end up, mate?
We did good. We did good. So two teams. We were the red team took 24th. The white team took 31st. It was 3-3. So awesomeness, and that we actually got to play against each other in round five.
That's right, the rivalry.
Army versus Army. It was amazing. We had a really great time. And you know, you talk about the team pairing up and everything. The dynamics of finding out we were going to play against each other and then going into it in the fifth round. Just really great. Because, you know, sometimes when you're playing in those longer tournaments, sometimes you find yourself playing against people that you know, it's a marathon, right? And sometimes you find yourself at mile 20 or mile 19 or something. You're like, man, I still got 6 miles to go. And having that kind of pick me up and playing against teammates in the middle of the day on day two was really awesome and really uplifting and really fun. So there was that. We got to go forward. So just a real quick, you know, perspective at it. So white team, the team I was the team captain of, we had quite the skew in the setup. We actually had three kind of heavier lists. Tim ran a chaos list with three Lord of Skulls, which he did amazing at, taking on Admech and Sisters left and right and just bossing through it. He did an awesome job. We had another player, Roger. He had the Megara Knights. And those looked amazing. And then we also had a Tyranid player, James. James played, he had a Herodin in his list and two Dynacarons. It was fun. We had a ton of fun. So I've
I just look forward to the next round of it.
So. But even with team tournaments, so sometimes you can get those skews to where, you know, what a list that we might look at and go, oh man, I don't know how that's going to do. It might do really well because you get some hand in picking your matchups.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that was, I thought there was some good weight because we didn't really sit there and try and come up with, we just went heavy in that kind of skew. And I thought it was a good approach. And I think that it led to some really fun games for folks too.
Yeah, and there's something to be said too, just about having a good time and
absolutely,
you know, however the dice work out, it's however they work out, and nobody's super stressed about it,
right? Yeah,
oh yeah. And then this past weekend, New Orleans singles competition, though.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, the GW events are actually brewing a pretty interesting meta in the models themselves, because once again, we're finding that it's the different terrain layouts are really crafting what people are bringing, and the people who are tailoring for the different kind of terrain sets are doing really well. It's weird that it seems like more often than not, the Games Workshop style of terrain breeds more combat-esque armies. Is that what you found, Paul?
I did. I saw a whole lot more armies that could... I will say I caught a little bit of heat with some comments I made on the Warhammer community site about what armies may flourish in this environment. And I don't want to say that I nailed it exactly right or anything like that. But it certainly did enable more of those types of armies with combined with player skill to do seemingly better than they would in other environments.
And now the biggest, and while whether you got flak or not, whatever, is what it is. But you can't deny that things like knights, things like stompers, things like these big things that really can't get much purchase elsewhere, seem to find a way to consistently do well in the right hands at the Games Workshop events. I don't think there's any denying that, which I think is a really good... some people say that's good, some people say that's bad. I think that's only good. I think the more armies that are viable is the diversity that we want, right?
Well, we saw a lot of Space Wolf armies doing well. We saw a Black Templar army do really well. We saw an Iron Hands, old school Iron Hands with Dreadnoughts and a Land Raider Achilles do well.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of diversity there. I'm not going to say that there's a lot of diversity in the factions, but a lot of diversity in the types of lists, the archetypes, so to speak, between, you know, shooty, MSU, horde, full melee, et cetera, aggressive, defensive. There seems to be a decent variety there. Even the gentleman who won last time, so Richard Siegler won this one, and he won the last one as well. So
great play, by the way.
Oh,
just
and yeah,
not, even mixed up his list a bit. Had to go through a lot of other amazing players to win, and deserves just every point he got.
Well, I was about to say, last time he took a very polarized, aggressive approach. He had a phenomenal amount of Sakaaran models, a lot of Elam or MSU, so multiple small units, and he was able to play the board at all times, and he had a good matchup into everybody. This time he took a more of a conventional, he took a Mars Admech build. Still had some aggressive elements, still had a lot of defensive elements, but he played it in a different style and still got the same result. And so I think that's very exciting for the game, that there isn't just one list. And look, I'm not going to lie and say that Admech isn't too good or that it doesn't need fixing, because I think there is a... It's almost undeniable that there are portions of that book, if not huge swathes of that book, that are just kind of too good for the points.
They have a couple of things in there that help them score points really well in missions. So even what might be a challenging game, they can kind of get ahead, you know, 15, 20 points in the score, never look back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that's I think that's the exact issue with them. Once they get ahead, you just can't make up the distance.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I don't want to necessarily critique just all the lists. I think that Drukhari are still going to do well. Admech are still going to do well. But I was encouraged by seeing the other factions that were doing well and some of the challenge or sort of what I would consider risky things that other players took and were successful. Space Wolves being one of those. I know that, you know, Adam, you know, we've seen Space Wolves seemingly on the rise almost in us looking at just tournaments being played across the board.
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of things that Space Wolves do that they can do better or as good as other armies. And so for those who might not be tracking the competitive echelon of the game as much as others, Space Marines have almost been pushed into two corners, so to speak, by the fact of how I think some of the stronger factions play, or some of the perceived more powerful factions, things like Drakari, Sisters, Adeptus Mechanicus, now Orcs, and just to a lesser extent, Grey Knights and T-Suns. Now, what's happening is they're kind of being pushed to this divide where you have a very defensive, DACA-intensive list, or you have a very aggressive MSU approach. And last GW event, we saw Blood Angels do really well, leaning into that aggressive stance. And now I think people have realized that Space Wolves do the same thing, a little bit less straight line power, but a bit more jank, if that makes sense, a bit more tools. And now what Space Wolves bring is that they bring a lot of fights last. A lot of fights last. They have more fights last than any other, possibly any other faction in the game, bar Drakari. And that being that you have a Judicia who can intervene 6 inches with a stratagem. You have the Armor of Russ, which just gives you perpetual aura of fights last. You have access to a Whirlwind, which every Space Marine army does, that gives it fights last. And you also have access to a Psychic Power that gives fights last. There's 4 sources there. And one of the biggest issues that Space Marines have is their inability to trade or to fight more than one combat at a time without losing out on the other one, and that's due to things like fights first, fights last, and interrupts. And as soon as you take 2 or 3 fights last elements in your list, all of a sudden you can fight on 3 fronts again. You can fight 3 different combats and have them all be on your terms, rather than, yeah, cool, I get the upper hand of this one, I lost this one, and this one's indifferent. And then that all of a sudden, if you do that for 2 or 3 turns, you don't have an army left.
Or I spent all my CP and I can't do this anymore, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect way of saying it as well. Yeah. You spend all your resources trying to plug up a hole, and you can't do it for next turn or the next turn.
So my one of my sparring partners plays Space Wolves, and I feel like Space Wolves, while they are like very good in melee, I do feel like because they're Space Marines, they do have really good supporting fire as well. And that one stratagem that allows the Long Fangs to ignore modifiers to hit is just like so good. It's so good. I played Space Wolves in one tournament when the book first came out, and like in the game that it was a three round tournament, and it was like the first games with Space Wolves that I had played since 7th edition. That stratagem, like, it made me only lose the game by a few points against my sparring partner, and he's like the Space Wolves guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We saw the Hounds of Mordecai get used.
Yeah, who would have thought? But yet again, like we talked about this for a couple of weeks, the resurgent psychic phase that we've seen be not quite dormant or an afterthought, but not a powerful phase worth investing in. It's really come back to the fore. And it's probably going to stay that way with the armies that are still yet to be released. A lot of the Chaos armies still yet to come out, the Craftworld Eldar, and also Tyranids all generally play a decent to exceptional psychic phase. And so I think we talked the week before last, Paul, about how people need to start taking this into account. We saw it just smack, bang, bang, true experience. A unit that people thought was a joke upon release that didn't really have much play into the meta because there wasn't enough psychers to warrant it. All of a sudden, it's making top tables.
Well, I mean, obviously the list, the Drakari list and the Adeptus Mechanicus list that were playing for the top spot had no psychers. So it's kind of interesting how you could prep for something that should be good and then it miss. But then I also want to talk about the Thousand Suns list that was up near the top that, I mean, obviously being played by a great player, they weren't at the top by accident, but they seemed to slant their list more towards what could have been just a traditional Chaos Space Marine list with just some Dreadnoughts. They did have a Forge Fiend in there, I think, which is going to be unique to the Thousand Suns. I don't think you'll see that other places. But didn't really lean into that all the psychic might that they could bring to bear.
Yeah, I do really love that Forge Fiend in the Thousand Suns army. And for those of you maybe aren't aware of some of the things that it can do that are different to others, they can put it up a strength. They can get it to strength 8, which is a really big breakpoint for things like Ramshackle, which is what orcs are leveraging a lot.
Orcs are right there just knocking on the door of being super dominant.
Exactly right, dude. And so having that one little tool that you can just be like, oh, that plane that you've got over there, almost definitely going to be half killing it, or, you know, 3/4 killing it, or even swatting it out of the air every turn. It's a very powerful thing to include in your list.
Yeah.
And I just like seeing a Forge Fiend on the table. They've been so maligned.
I love the way they look. I have a couple that, well, I had painted previously because I decided that everything I was going to paint for Chaos was going to be Death Guard colors.
Nice.
Guess what Death Guard can't take?
Yeah.
Mauler Fiends. But that's a cool model.
Absolutely.
I kit mashed mine up to be the Keymaster and Gatekeeper.
Oof, that's sweet. What did you play at the team tournament, Red? What was your army?
What's that?
What army did you play for that team tournament?
Oh, I mean, Drukhari.
Red ain't messing around.
Yeah. No, he's ready to play. No plan.
It was good. I mean, some people, you know, I wanted to take my guard. I admit, I'm making some great progress on my guard currently. You want to talk about some finishing moves? I finally got a, so I'm using 1996 guard models, right? And it was trying to figure out the right way to get them onto these 3D bases I have. And I thought about pinning them and everything, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, I played Drukhari. the guard bases, though, I did figure out. I got them in with a Dremel. And so I cut into the 3D bases. And that's how I got them into the bases. They're actually going really well and making great progress, but not good enough progress to take them. And so with Drukhari, I had lots of fun because I took, you know, you talk about the ramshackle deal. My incubi just could not. That was one of my tougher games for sure, was against orcs. I went into orc semi buggy list. Mm-hmm. He had a great list. But it wasn't the like 14 buggies or whatever. It was, I think he had maybe 6 or 8, and then he had the 2 jets. But I was running double Trueborn. And, you know, Tanya, yeah, you were talking about the Long Fangs having that ability to ignore modifiers. Well, having 2 double Trueborn ignoring modifiers with 2 blasters and dark lances was really nice and took those planes out of the sky pretty well. But the ramshackle thing is definitely an endurance thing that made me reconsider how I was going to go about fighting the orcs.
Is it funny that? Yeah, absolutely. Is it funny that so for those of you who may not know, the orc kind of competitive archetype at the moment is a lot of their buggies, a bunch of planes, and then some MSU Stormboys and Commandos. Generally seems to be the list at the moment, or the core of the list at the moment. It's just really amusing to me that I feel like that's exactly how I want Guard to play. Like they are exactly what I want Guard to.
Couple
be.
Couple of Valkyries.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you know, bring back the hallowed Vendetta.
Yeah. I really enjoyed using Vendettas back in the day.
Yeah, everybody did.
Speaking of Guard, though, didn't a Guard player do relatively well in the...
Actually, we saw a lot of... So, indirect fire. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about how the terrain is conducive to kind of, you know, assault armies being able to midfield control armies getting up there and that kind of stuff. Oh, and I wanted to, before we get too deep, I want to talk about, after we talk about this part, about how maybe the psychic meta won't develop. Maybe that's not something people have to plan for, but I think it should. But before that, indirect fire, when there's a lot of line of sight blocking stuff or lanes of fire that you have to be cognizant of and you don't want to have to always constantly be moving in position, indirect fire was really brutalizing folks in some situations.
Yeah, the orc mortar buggies just doing a ton of damage.
That's the Rucka truck squig buggies.
You could have said anything just then and most people would have just nodded.
The Flippityberg Smackledinks. That's what you meant to say.
I swear G-Dub had like a dartboard of just random names and they're just how are we gonna name this one? ... So Snazwagon Blitzburner.
Slotbot Mola.
It's the same way they label all the Baneblades. It's either there's only 2 columns. There's Storm and there's Bane. And then you just point the dart at the other combination.
Yep. Yep, there's a matrix that you can
they flip a coin for Storm or Bane and then they throw a dart to get the other bit. Bane, Storm, Hammer, Nugget. Has to be a tool of some kind. Like they haven't used a saw yet or a drill. Those are open. Could be Bane drill, Storm saw, you know? Plenty of opportunities.
I like it. Yeah, seems reasonable. Well, yes, indirect fire and from guard, and so that guard player that we saw do pretty well had quad launchers, mana cores, things of that nature. We saw the heck a Land Raider Achilles in the Iron Hands list that had a little bit of indirect fire.
I love that thing. It's got to be one of the best looking marine tanks out
there. It took me by surprise because so I was looking at the camera and just saw the Land Raider like profile. Like, oh, it's a Landry. And then Nick, who my, you know, partner on the stream, said it's an Achilles. I'm like, psh, nobody's taking an Achilles. So I basically ignored the fact that it was an Achilles for like a turn and a half. And then it comes coming around the corner of this building. The dude jump packs a librarian over with Null Zone. Null Zone's a knight, and the Land Raider just pastes it.
Ices it. Yeah, just ices it. It's amazing.
I mean, can you imagine that the fact that you're a knight player and you come up against the one Land Raider Achilles in the...
You wouldn't even be mad. You'd be like, oh, well, I'm happy for you, bro.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy you a drink.
That is. It's like, oh, no, that's the luck sometimes. Mm. And then the knight player is playing a combined knight and Adeptus Mechanicus Force. Got real aggressive with his knight, but I felt like he probably felt like he had to because of... the way the train look, you have to make them a factor. You want to try to establish some momentum and maybe make a what might be a risky play. And then he jumped over the library with the Null Zone, and that just kind of, you know, made that a poor decision. So.
Yeah, and is anybody actually know to be afraid of a Land Raider these days? Well, I see a Land Raider, I'm like, I'm not worried.
I don't know, man. Oh, this thing's got a giant cannon on the nose and four multi-meltas on it.
Exactly. And then you're like, oh god, I didn't have enough questions.
He might have said the same thing I did. He looked out of the corner of his eye and like, yeah, whatever, it's a Land Raider, I don't even mess with it.
Yeah.
And then deeply regretted that. But it was still fun to watch, and the dude was making the Adeptus Mechanicus and Knight players making good moves, and I'm willing to bet he just felt like he had to get aggressive and dig out of some of that artillery that the Iron Hands player had. It was like a classic, which I mean, almost like a story driven list. Four or five dreadnoughts, Land Raider.
Sounds beautiful. Only challenge I'll put to the Black Templars book is it better make me want to take a Crusader again.
A Land Raider Crusader?
If you can make me want to take the Land Raider Crusader again, it will be 10 out of 10 good.
Maybe if Primaris can suddenly fit.
You don't know. Yeah, you do know Primaris school. Probably don't go in there.
I do. But that's... I don't care. Give me a thing. Give me something. Throw me a bone here. I want to use my Crusader.
I think the Crusader's in one of the pictures. Yeah, I'm scrolling. No, it's not the Crusader. It's a regular old Gottheimer Land Raider. They've got the picture shows some Terminators and Outriders and a Gottheimer Land Raider going up against some more Beast Snaggas.
If they would, I just want to use it.
One of my Crusaders is the... it's a Blood Angel Crusader. I don't have a Black Templar Crusader. Is the old original metal model. Or not... not the Land Raider's not metal, but all the bolter bits are metal.
So that was from back in the day before they had a separate kit, right?
Yeah. And if... well, you bought the Land Raider Crusader, and it came with these metal bit upgrades for the bolters. And it was probably the most tedious thing I've ever tried to assemble.
Yikes.
It was... yes, horrific. I still remember it to this day.
Did you hear about the crazy guys in Australia who bought the metal, the Thunderhawk?
I heard about that, yeah.
They're never going to build that thing.
Oh, it's already built. It's already built. It's in a case. It's
going to get... goodness. What champions?
Yeah, I know. Chucked on a plinth and put in a display cabinet. But you talk about how much that thing must weigh.
Yeah,
I'm right. Yeah, it is a Thunderhawk.
I saw a YouTube channel make a Thunder build one of those.
It was Squidmar.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a mate who's got an Ultramarines one for Horus Heresy. I've seen that one in the flesh, and it's gigantic. Just imagining that made out of metal is, you know, do you have to list it as a weapon on a flight? Like,
probably. Yeah. Yeah.
It comes under the same regulation as a baseball bat.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. So speaking while I'm looking at that picture of the Black Templar. Let me go. I don't want to segue us too much. So with indirect fire, yes, was really good. So and also we talked about that stuff that's like out of phase things, anything that could interrupt or basically any trick that you did that moved out of turn, you know, that kind of stuff was really putting on a spectacle at this tournament. And I have to imagine that that's, if you're looking at your codex and you're struggling with army list or even your performance on the tabletop that, and you aren't utilizing and you have ability to do that, some of that stuff, and you aren't utilizing it, now's the time to break it out and to see what you need to engineer in your list, I think, to do that kind of stuff, because it is, yeah, I mean, it was working really well. But what we didn't see was these, like the Grey Knights and the Thousand Suns didn't really lean in to their psychic power potential. And does that mean it might not be as good as we are thinking?
Yeah, so remember I told you about the polarities of the kind of Space Marine Codex options at the moment. It kind of feels like the same thing for the Grey Knights. Just kind of feel like a good aggressive Space Marine build that has a good psychic phase to buff their own stuff. E.g., like to the same extent that someone would feel about bringing two chaplains instead.
Mm-hmm.
And T-Suns feel like the same thing, but more of like an Ultramarine or an Iron Hands list, where they have a very good gun line and then they can spruik it up. But it's the T-Suns one that gets me curious, gets me interested, because the sheer amount of mortal wounds that I hear that can come out from that army, like we're talking 20 plus a turn pretty reliably if you lean hard into it. You're telling me that's not good enough to take? Is it just because of the G-Dub terrain and so much of the board is obscured was the only reason I thought it might be left on the table? Just because people can really control how much you can smite. You're going to be able to do your Zinch's Firestorms and your Gateways and your things of that, they can target things. But most of them need line of sight. So you kind of...
Yeah, but you just come around the corner of your infantry, you just go through the wall.
Yeah, there is something to that, especially with the advent of bodyguard rules. You can really expose your characters a lot more without them just being instantly killed. But still, it leaves you at the whims of a savvy player at times on the Games Workshop boards. That is.
Mm-hmm. Red, did you see many psychic armies in your last foray in the team tournament?
No, not. I mean, there was. I think we kind of expected Grey Knights as a typical, because that Nemesis, the Dread Knight build,
mm-hmm.
is a pretty prevalent one, I think.
Yeah, five-ish yeah. Dread Knights.
Right. And so I think with that, it's less about the psychic being... I think the psychic aspect in that case is just a supplement or a support aspect. I don't think it's like their key... It's not a gimmick and that it's a requirement. I think the Nemesis Dread Knights are kind of... clearly, they can move, they can deal out damage, and they're durable to an extent, and they come with built-in invulns and whatnot. And so they have a lot more other things going on for them that they're really trying to take advantage of.
Our buddy Thomas Powers Reed was running those in New Orleans, a bunch of Dread Knights.
I think that they're a tough matchup for certain armies, and so they can really take advantage of that. So I think in the team tournament format, I think that they were a great one to bring along that people could capitalize on some of their benefits.
I mean, again, maybe misreading it, but I think it's incredibly strong, and you may be right. Maybe this is, there's still too many things in it, or the fact that they're maybe not point efficient into AdMech. Maybe that's what's holding them back. I don't know that I've run too many simulations.
I mean, I think they're a great aspect. I think that they're worth their weight in a lot of things. I think that many aspects have different, some frustrating matchups. I think maybe like when you talk about AdMech, I think actually that they can do okay against some of the normal AdMech list. I think the AdMech skew, the list right now that has 6 flyers, mm-hmm. For AdMech, I think that's a tough one for a lot of people to take on, not just Grey Knights in that regard.
Well, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? We're seeing this kind of resurgence of flyers, and I don't want to say it's exclusively at the Games Workshop events, but I think we've seen it more at the Games Workshop events than elsewhere. Paul, is there much to that? Do you think there's the fact that so much of the board is blocked out, it means that, you know, being able to sling a flyer 60 odd inches and get whatever angle you need is just powerful?
It is incredibly powerful, but that's powerful, I think, anywhere.
Right. And yeah.
For a variety of reasons, including like character sniping and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Between and move blocking and essentially your ability to herd the other army. I only had 2 Void Ravens in my Drukhari list, and that still was more than enough in some cases of how you position the planes and how you can control what's on the field where. And that having 6 and their ability to pivot and everything is... It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think as soon as I say, oh, psychics are they're not a factor in the army, then you will see them all at the next tournament. So not that I have any influence to that. I feel like I would just give bad advice. That's why I'm going to try not to give any advice whatsoever, other than the fact that I think that psychic, like those two powerhouse armies, are indeed powerhouses, and maybe the you know, primary generals of those just didn't tech into that way for whatever reason. Well, and I think they probably would have done a little bit better if they did.
Well, you're still, it's something I'm still spouting as well. It's interesting when we see new codexes come out, just how far quickly a top meta build coalesces, like how quickly it takes people to figure it out, or, you know, quotation marks, solve the book, find out the best things to stick together in a list. Paul, you called this straight away. You're like, I think everyone's got the best stuff for the Grey Knights already. Whereas I think people are still trying to figure out what that is for T-Suns. Like, how many Rubiks is it? Is it one unit of 10 Scarab of Gold? Is it 2 units of 10?
Yeah,
two
how many five? Terminators? Yeah.
How many characters is too many? How many Cabal points is too many? What kind of a shooting base do I need? Do I even need a shooting base? That kind of stuff. I think there's a lot more questions being asked of T-Suns than there are of Grey Knights. Because I feel like at the baseline, you can just use a lot of the Space Marine metrics to feel like what kind of good-ish units there are. Interceptors are good. How'd they figure that out? Because for the last year, we've realized the Vanguard veterans are very good. So obviously, these are going to be good too. It wasn't rocket science, so to speak. Oh, Armager Helverins are good. Redemptor Dreads are good. Contemptor Dreads are good. Turns out Dread Knights are good. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Astonishing revelations. But T-Suns bring a lot of very unique aspects, very unique unit choices. I feel like it's still in the forming stage.
Yeah, you're probably right. Unless you were just a Terminator enthusiast and had all of them ready to go.
I do think one unit of 10 Termies is ferocious. Scarab Occult Terminators, I think, very good.
Well, this general actually took some Chaos Spawn too, which I'm behind that play 100%, as y'all know.
Me too, mate. Me too. We said the same thing. Like, if you look for they have durable stuff, or they have squishy stuff. They don't have any fast, durable stuff. And I feel like Chaos Spawn was the only thing they could chuck in there. Apart from you were big on the Enlightened, weren't you?
Yeah, the three mana Enlightened score, I think, are also pretty good. Because especially in this edition, with the how you score your secondaries, or how do you enable yourself to consistently score secondaries.
I totally agree.
I like them. And the Thousand Suns also have a stratagem to buff up the Chaos Spawn, which allows them to pick their mutation in combat. And I think it gives them one more attack, if I remember right.
Their profile is good into so many things that are out there at the
damage
moment.
Damage 2, like neg 2. Profile.
Yeah, man. Really good, really good.
Yeah, oh, great. Hey, thanks, Grey Knights, for bringing your power armor closer to me to try to get your smite off. Let me eat you up with this 2 damage.
Oh, you actually did bring a warding stave and have a 5+. Oh, sorry, the 5+ in the shooting. But anyway. Sanctuary.
Yeah. Well, I think it's questionable whether or not you buff them up in every game, but that ability to increase them to pick the mutation is strong, because that's really the only drawback, is sometimes you don't roll exactly what you need.
Mm. Yep, that is a drawback.
And I'm talking about with the Chaos Spawn mutation specifically.
I know. I'm just kidding. For real.
I just realized after you pointed it out how ridiculous that statement is. No, but the Chaos Spawn, you know, they have a D. You basically roll in a D3 and you get some type of mutation for your combat. And being able to choose that on something that's already right there on being what I consider a great value unit, you know, something to think about, especially if you're relying, if you are taking what we kind of consider a traditional Chaos Space Marine fire base already, and you need some forward push things. You know, that's it. They also don't need a lot of CP to support themselves either, if you're taking a lot of Dreadnoughts and Fortunes, I don't think.
Mm, yeah, great.
Yeah, there we go. Well, that's all the time we have for in this episode.
When's your next event, Tanya? When's your next event, Paul? When's your next event?
I'm trying to get to some local stuff in October. There is a team tournament in Dallas that I'm really hoping to be able to get to, but I got to see how work and everything clears out. I might not be able to make it just due to other stuff going on that I'm tied up with, but that's what I'm hoping to go for. And if not that, then I've got some other local events I'm really excited to get out to.
It's looking like I'm probably not going to get to any events this year unless my buddy Alex is going down to a little GT in Vancouver. Then I will hop in with him. But if that doesn't happen, then there'll be no events for me until the new year.
Fair enough.
I'm trying to get up to Dicehead, which is a store in Chattanooga, or right near Chattanooga. And it's just some of the best people in wargaming, and they have something coming up soon. I'm gonna try to get up to.
Nice.
And when's the next G-Dub event?
Is that that would be in Austin. November? Yeah, coming up not too long from now.
Nice. Yeah, a lot to be excited about.
Yeah. Yep. Gotta. Yeah. And now I'm kind of in flux. It's like, oh man, what do I take? I'm building. I've got kind of sidetracked with work and vacation and this other stuff, and I'm kind of not sure what I want to take to the next big thing.
Fair.
I know.
With everything coming out, it'll be interesting to see what you're more comfortable with.
Well, with seeing what is, I feel like the door's open to take all manner of things.
It absolutely is.
So I don't have to maybe paint all these Rangers anymore.
You're trying to get yourself out of doing. There's the motivation.
I can just work on my buddy's Grindout army and be like, hey man, you mind if I borrow that?
Nothing wrong with that either.
or knights or something. We'll see. Anyway, it's a good time to be playing Warhammer. That's one of the coolest things at this last tournament is that it's not hyperbole. We saw all types of different armies on the table and being successful to all different kind of degrees. And you know, basically, kind of coming down to player skill and opportunity. And that was fun to watch and fun to commentate on.
Oh, for sure. It's a great ride.
Where
can I find it if they want to watch it back?
Yeah, those videos, if they're on the Warhammer TV Twitch, they're still up. You can see them all right now. You can see all the coverage if you happen to be interested in seeing what people are playing. But watch that game where we do some commentary on the Raven Guard list. The way he has it all painted up is Raven Guard third company. And he has Shrike painted with it. I know Shrike has been promoted to Chapter Master. But he had him in his third company heraldry for the purposes of his army. It's pretty good.
That is cool. I love those little homages.
It's real good. Yeah. Absolutely worth checking out. Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with a finishing move segment next week and talking about more 40K shenanigans. We'll see y'all.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.